Hello, everybody. At Encounter Church, we believe that every Christian has a story to tell about how they have witnessed God change their life. In today's episode, you will hear a personal witness testifying to God's work in the past and their expression of hope in the active and ongoing work of God for the days ahead. Today's story is personal, it's real, and we hope that it leads you to have a real and meaningful encounter with God today. Enjoy.
All right, I am the true vine. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away, and every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit, for apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch and withers, and the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples. So, Laura, what would it look like for you to enter into a season of deep abiding? This is the question that my mentor asked me the very first time we spoke. It was September 2021, and we were over Zoom because we lived in two different states. And we were basically strangers at that point. So when she asked me this, I was like, abide? I don't even know how to answer that question. And I wasn't even sure what it meant, nor did I understand where that question even came from. I had started out our conversation by catching her up. I had explained that I was being encouraged to resign from my position of director of communications at my church. And this decision was made after I expressed to my pastors that I believed that God was calling me into full-time vocational ministry. But I didn't know what that really meant for me, and I was working at the church trying desperately to find contentment in a job that I knew was no longer for me. All while simultaneously spending every single waking moment growing a vibrant young adult ministry, which for the context of this podcast, I will refer to as YA, because that's what we called it. It was YA. I was exhausted, depressed, and was rapidly deconstructing my faith. I just could not for the life of me understand why that spending my days making announcements or social media graphics was more important than investing and discipling these new people that God was putting right in front of me at the time. And I so badly wanted to grow as a leader, and I was yearning to be discipled myself, and I was craving direction. So I knew that I needed to resign with the hope that I would just be shifted into this young adult pastor role, or I don't know, more of a discipleship role come the new year. So, what would it look like for me to enter into a season of abiding? I legitimately did not know. So I think I answered the question something like, well, I don't know if I'm not offered a new job come the new year. I can still run YA as a volunteer. Like, I don't need to be in a position or a paid role to do it, to be a leader. And I guess I'll just patiently wait on God's provision. And my mentor, who's also named Laura, responded to me with so much grace. And she said, your response still contains a posture of doing. And when I asked you about abiding, I'm asking you what it would look like for you to take an intentional season of sitting with God and not doing for God. So then she read to me John chapter 15, verses 1 through 8, which I read before. And she said to me, Laura, it's obvious that you are extremely burnt out, and I have no doubt that God is calling you to do really great things, but I encourage you to pray for pruning, because it's when God prunes things away and you are able to truly abide, in that abiding, you're going to hear God's voice, and you will get the clarity and the direction that you're so desperately seeking. And I can look back on that conversation and say with confidence that I hung up so confused, but I trusted my mentor, and I was so desperate for direction at that point, I began to pray for pruning. So here's the funny thing about God. He is a faithful Father that hears our prayers, and he answers them, but rarely do his responses appear in a manner that we are comfortable with. or in a timing that we expect. So what happened next was nothing that I saw coming. In the months following that conversation, I resigned from my job and I told the staff at my church that as of January 1st, 2022, I was going to be stepping down to pursue a call in ministry. And at that point, I was really, really hopeful that that position would just mean like a different spot for me within the church. But that position never came into fruition. And over the next few months, I experienced micromanaging to like the 1,000th degree. This came in the form of harassment, bullying, gaslighting, and manipulation of scripture to justify bad behavior by one of the pastors. It occurred both during work hours, as well as on weekends and holidays. And I spent months trying to understand what was happening. And to this day, I still don't know what exactly happened to cause these types of behaviors. And I've just resigned myself to knowing that I might not ever have the answers that I'd like to have. But what I do know is that God was actively pruning my life. And the biggest way was in the removal of what was really the main branch and that had become my lifeline, and that was my church. But I'm a fighter. I did not go down without a fight. And so I went to the members of the leadership team and to the senior staff members, both seeking protection for myself and also healthy reconciliation. Because for as mad as I was, there was never a moment in time that I was just like, burn it all to the ground. I had a lot of extreme feelings of betrayal and anger, but I still continued to push for mediation and healing because I think in the back of my mind, I still was hopeful for a job there. Like I wanted that role. And so I was asked to provide a folder of my emails and texts that documented all of these interactions. And I was so hopeful that there was going to be accountability. However, I quickly realized that it was going to be easier for them to have me finish out my duties and slip away than it would be to do the hard work of repair. And so after a lot of prayer and careful consideration and lots of therapy, my husband and I made the decision that we were going to need to take a break, at least from worshiping there on Sunday mornings for the foreseeable future. And so that Christmas Eve, 2021, I entered the church for what I knew in my heart was going to be the last time, at least for a while. And it felt like a funeral for the life that I had known for the last decade. But it was wild because it was Christmas. And so everyone around was so happy and we're singing these Christmas carols that are just filled with so much cheer. And it's like this great celebration. But I sat there and I felt like I was dying, which it sounds dramatic, but it's the reality. I wanted so badly to feel relief. And I just felt nothing but grief in that moment. And I'd made it to the last week of my job, which it was really, really hard to just continue to show up day in and day out while all this was going on at the end. But I was determined to finish well, and I think that I did finish well, all while facing the reality that this place that we had called home for 10 years was no longer safe. In my hands, I clutched the Christmas Eve bulletin, and it felt like a piece of physical evidence memorializing the bullying that I had endured in a staff meeting just a few weeks prior. And as I sat there and paged through it, looking at all the blurbs of the upcoming events for the new year, it was just a reminder that life was going to continue on as planned, and I was no longer going to be a part of it. The thought of leaving honestly terrified me. I think Greg and I knew that if we decided to leave, it wouldn't just mean walking away from the church or the job. It would cost us our community and some of our deepest friendships. And we knew that this decision was going to cause, and even that Christmas, it was already causing major relational repercussions within our families. And so, like, that was all the context of what was happening as I sat there in the pew that Christmas. And so as I was sitting there, I was hit with the reality that my friends and my family would rather choose complacency and personal comfort over my safety and well-being. And that was a really tough pill to swallow while everyone was sitting there rejoicing. I watched as I became invisible. I knew that we needed to leave. I knew that God was calling me into ministry, and it had been made abundantly clear at this point that there wasn't a place for me there. And I knew that I couldn't stay and represent a church that overlooked the abuse of its employees. And I had been praying for pruning, but never in a million years did I expect all of this. So I have to just like put the disclaimer out there that we loved our church, and we still love that church. This was a place that Greg and I had called home for almost a decade. It was Greg's childhood church and his parents' childhood church and their parents' childhood church. So this was like a generational church for his family. It is where we both served as worship leaders for almost a decade. It is where we raised and baptized our kids. This church was where our community was, and it was where our kids' community was. This is where both of our families were. My mom had served on staff for 5 years, overlapping our time on staff there. And it was where Greg and I did ministry together as worship leaders. It was where I first felt called to ministry. And if I'm being completely honest, it was where we both found Jesus. Church, this church in particular, was our entire world. And so the decision to leave was not one that we made lightly, or even one if we made, if I'm being completely honest. Because even a few days after Christmas, as I packed up my office and I handed in my keys, still thinking like I'm coming back to do YA on Tuesday, I handed my keys over to the administrative director, and he looked at me and he said, have a nice life. I never wanted to leave, but I knew that there was no longer a place for me there. So before I continue, I just want to say that my story is ultimately a resurrection story. It's a story of healing and rebirth, but it also includes a lot of death. And it's really super important that that part isn't glossed over, because it's impossible to fully understand the joy that has come from the healing without understanding and acknowledging the depth of my pain and the dark place from which I started. My story includes trauma related to emotional and spiritual abuse, and that's kind of a touchy subject within church communities these days. That's not a lot of people like to talk about it or like to acknowledge that these things happen far too often. But I speak out about it proudly and boldly because I believe that as humans, God has given us power and authority, and like anything, with great power comes great responsibility. And as Christians, this is especially true for us. I am so passionate about speaking out about abuse that happens within our churches, not to point fingers or to cast blame or to cause division. I talk about it first and foremost because I know that sadly my experiences aren't unique to me. And secondly, I really truly believe that there is a beautiful way forward for the church. But we can't get there, and we cannot work towards a solution if we're unable to first acknowledge that there is a problem. Jesus calls us to be a unified church, but unity can't be achieved without first identifying our sins and doing the really hard work of repentance and repair. And I have learned, and I hope that the rest of my story conveys this, that when we steward our power in a way that leverages our hurt for the purposes of healing, that is when we experience the deep soul transformation of resurrection. So yeah, my story includes abuse, but abuse should not be the takeaway. And I choose to tell my story in this way not because I want to disparage our old church or anyone in particular. My goal is not to talk poorly about people. That's not my intention. However, it's impossible to tell my story without mentioning all of this trauma and how this affected me, because leaving our church and healing from spiritual abuse has by far been the most painful experience that Greg and I have ever had to work through in our 12 years of marriage. At the point we were walking through this, it was 10 going on 11 years. This experience changed the way that I view ministry. It has challenged my faith, and it has shaped my relationship with God. And quite frankly, I'm just not the same person who I used to be. So before I proceed with what came after the leaving, and before I jump to the healing, I just want you to sit with me in what very much felt like the valley of the shadow of death. Because I think that's part of discipleship. I think when we can sit with people in their pain and we can learn to be uncomfortable in that tension, that is when that growth happens, and that's when that relational depth occurs. So I'm asking for that in my story. January of that year came, and our family was hit with what felt like a tidal wave of loss. For months, it just felt like every week or so there was another major fallout or another really, really hard conversation that left us with zero closure or another like major unraveling of friendship. It was like weeks of just trying to process and grieve, all while feeling like we're just treading water, trying to stay afloat for ourselves as individuals, for our marriage, for our kids. It was wild. This whole thing was so much more than just leaving a church. And I alluded to what I thought that was going to be, and that I think we knew deep down in our hearts that this was going to be big, and we tried to prepare for it, but we had just no idea of the amount of loss that was going to come from it. It was so much more than the loss of my job, but that was a huge part of it. All of a sudden, I had nothing to do come January. Like, I would take my kids to school, and I was just alone all day, every day, and I was trying to fill my time. This was the loss of our church, our small group, some of our very best friendships. It eventually became the loss of our young adult YA ministry and even the future dreams of church planting that we had. There was a tremendous effect also on our family relationships, because our family, our parents and siblings in particular, felt like we were putting them in a position where they also needed to leave. And while we never asked anyone to do that, in fact, we told them specifically, like, do not make this decision because it's our decision. We hoped, I mean, I think anybody would hope that their pain would be worth leaving for. Not out of spite, but because staying and ignoring it meant choosing to overlook abuse. And that's really uncomfortable. And most significantly for me, this entire thing reopened trauma wounds from a previous and very different kind of abuse that I experienced as a teenager that I had spent 20 years actively trying to bury. But that's the thing about trauma. If you don't process it and you don't heal it, it doesn't just go away. And while this situation with our church involved very different types of abuse, the triggers were the same. And I realized very quickly in my processing of all of this that pain makes people uncomfortable when it implies that they're going to have to either question what is comfortable to them or make a change in order to provide protection to other people. And so I realized that I had spent so much of my life minimizing my own discomfort and my own trauma in order to make everyone else around me feel more comfortable. And so I was done at this point. All of a sudden, my calendar was wide open. Like I said, I had no job, no social plans, which was really tough as an extrovert. And I had nothing to do except for spend time with God. And I'm not gonna lie, I felt like this I was being forced into abiding at this point. Like, I had prayed for pruning and I wanted the abiding, but I didn't want the abiding to look and feel like this, because it was awful, like the absolute worst. But I want to be clear that the choice to abide was still very much mine. It would have been so easy to just walk away at this point, like honestly, from being a Christian altogether. And I understand it happens so frequently, and I understand why. Like, I really, truly do. I was so rapidly deconstructing my faith at this point, and not necessarily my faith in who God is or who Jesus is, but deconstructing this idea of church and these systems that I had known and loved and felt comforted by my entire life. And I was so angry and confused at the disparity between the love of Jesus as it is shown throughout the Gospels and then what I was experiencing from my Christian family, both my personal family and my church family. But I think despite all of that anger, that call to ministry was still somewhere in there. And I knew that if I was going to come out on the other side of all of this, I wanted to be a healthy leader. And I knew that the only way that I was going to get there was with divine healing at this point. Like, I was doing therapy. I was doing everything that I could do in my power, but it was not enough because I was seriously depressed. So I decided that the only way I was going to survive this was to let God in. And so abiding didn't come naturally, and it was not something that happened overnight. But despite the bigness of my emotions and the discomfort I felt, I continued to lean into that tension in order to pursue Jesus. And little by little, I found hope in him. But that was really uncomfortable. And at first, it felt like I was sitting in my house alone all day, and I would picture Jesus sitting there. And it was like I was sitting as far backed into a corner as I could, just like, hey. Hi, you know what's going on. I don't have to speak it out loud, because just the act of being vulnerable in that moment was so hard and uncomfortable. And so as I started to heal, and the more I chose to allow God into the processing of these emotions, I had a few pretty big realizations that I had to face in who I was as a person and as a Christian. Pretty quickly into this healing journey. I had been a part of some very codependent systems my entire life. And so when it came to church, Greg and I had spent the entire last decade fighting for the church as an organization to change so that we didn't have to. And another hard truth that I had to wrestle with was how much of an idol I had created out of ministry. It was so much of an idol in my life that losing it felt like my identity was shattered. I was so used to being busy for God and doing for God that I had absolutely no idea how to just sit and be with him. And so I knew that if I was going to truly abide, I would need to allow him in to the processing of my pain and my brokenness and ask him to heal my heart. But like I said, like with that imagery of sitting like backed in a corner, not even being able to speak it out loud, when you have betrayal trauma, especially trauma from someone whose society has deemed safe, like family members, close friends, spiritual leaders, the church body, it makes it very, very difficult to be vulnerable. And even though I could separate in my brain logically that God and his love for me is not the same as the sin and the brokenness of humanity, it still made it very hard to be open. And so in a lot of ways, I felt like I was a brand new Christian, like completely starting from scratch, which is wild because I had just been plucked from 10 years of leadership. But I was finally at a point where I was feeling my emotions and I was able to name it, just not with God. And so recognizing this was like a major step forward for me in my journey. And I outline this because I think a lot of people struggle with this and don't realize it. And so it was a really slow process. And much of the spring, I was really a hot mess of a human being. And one day I was crying to my mentor over Zoom about everything that had happened. And she said, hey, you know, I have a friend who runs a retreat center specifically for wounded and weary ministry leaders in Puerto Rico. And I would love to send you and your husband. It's called the Caneo Center, and it's run by Dan and Tanya White. And they're so, so good at helping people understand their own personal, like, how they process pain and trauma. And how it applies to your current wounds, but also your past wounds. And then also together with your spouse to work through how that looks in a marriage and in a family. And so I sat there and I was just like, what? Like you want to send us to Puerto Rico? And not only that, like I knew who Dan was. He was the co-founder of the V3 movement, which is a church planting and remissioning movement that I had been actively following for years and just like desperately wanting to be a part of, but not knowing how to be a part of this community. He was also the author of a book that my friend and I had been reading together and working through together in preparation to plant a church. And so all of a sudden in this conversation that was filled with so much despair, I saw a tiny glimmer of hope. I mean, how could you not feel hope when you're like, here's a trip to Puerto Rico? So Greg and I went to Caneo in June of last year, and we spent 5 days in the jungle resting and processing our pain and actively working to heal. And it was the most, words don't even describe what this experience was. Beautiful, holy, transformative experience that we have ever had. And on our last day there, our session was all about moving forward. And so we mapped out a plan for further spiritual and emotional healing, like for us as individuals and as a couple. And I just was like, you know, Dan, I'm still kind of feeling lost. Like we're talking about moving forward, but yet I don't know what that tangibly means for me. And so he said, well, what are your hopes and dreams? And I said, you know, I just want to be a part of a healthy group of people who are willing to embrace creativity and think outside the box in order to live like Jesus and be committed to fostering discipleship. I was like, basically, I just want to be a part of V3. And he looked at me and he laughed and he was like, Laura, he's like, you can be a part of V3. He's like, we can make that happen today. He's like, you don't need to be a pastor. But he's like, I really think that you should be, because you're going to learn all of this stuff and then you're going to have nowhere to take it and apply it. And so he goes, I really think that you should consider seminary. And so I was like, nope, not doing that. I had a whole list of reasons why I wasn't going to go to seminary. I didn't want to go back to grad school. I was very hesitant about any type of like formal Christian organization at that point. And he's like, no, I want you to specifically pray about Missio Seminary. They're not like the rest. They're doing new, innovative things. He's like, and I really think you're going to find your people there. And so I sat there and didn't obviously roll my eyes, I don't think. But later that afternoon, when we were back in our room, I looked up Missio Seminary. And as soon as I saw their homepage and I read their mission statement, I knew that that was where I was going to be. So after a lot of tears and prayer, I applied for Missio to pursue a master's degree in missional ministry. And thanks to dropping Dan's name, I received a pretty significant referral discount on my tuition, which I don't say that to brag. I say that because at that time I was unemployed. So the thought of starting grad school was like, how does this even financially work for us? I also had no church, so I didn't have any pastors to help me with references or any of the application process. But thanks to Dan and my mentor and my brother, who is also a pastor, I was able to complete the entire application without using any pastoral references from my former church. And so there was so much redemption happening, like in every little single step of this process. But yet, with each step of healing came so much ambivalence, because every step forward to my new future was like being washed with this wave of relief and joy. Just like I was excited for the first time in months, but yet there was still this tremendous grief and sadness, because every step forward was one step further from my old life. And that, like, even now is still really hard. But I started Missio last August, and there just are not enough words to describe what Missio has been to me. On Easter this last year, Pastor Greg asked us to share ways that we have seen the living Jesus. And I didn't get up and speak on that day because I'm like, oh man, without context, this isn't even going to be nearly as powerful. And I knew that even back then, the Spirit was prompting me to share this story in full. So I waited, but The truth is I found Jesus every time that I chose to surrender and I chose to abide. And for me, what that meant was that abiding was leaning into the tension of the unknown and the discomfort of my journey. And so slowly but surely, I began to see new life springing like from that pruned back branch. For every doubt that I had about going back to school, God responded not just with a single affirmation, but blessed me 100 times over with like new vines and new fruit in my life. And it started happening pretty rapidly. I was so anxious that I would get caught up in academia. I tend to go like really hard and really hyper-focused when it's something that I'm passionate about. But I was so worried that I would do that and that I would neglect this relationship with God that I had spent so long trying to cultivate, only to have a spiritual formation class, like right off the bat, the start of seminary, where our assignment was to memorize and recite John 15, verses 1 through 8. I grieved my YA community every single Tuesday night for months. And God responded with a missio class schedule that met at the exact same time, Tuesdays from 6 to 10. I lacked a solid Christian community, and God provided me with a missio cohort of diverse friends from all different ethnicities, backgrounds, and denominations to learn from and to grow with. I mourned a lack of healthy leadership in my life, and God blessed me with professors who were more interested in discipling me and forming well-balanced and healthy leaders than creating cogs in an institutional machine. I carried anger towards the church overall as I continued to heal my wounds of abuse, and God answered even that with professors and coaches who empowered me to study the topic of abuse within the church, and then use that knowledge to teach my class about a missional church's response to the abuse of power. And I had to choose a concentration for my degree. Like, missional ministry had different like specifications that I could choose. And so the one that I chose, specifically church remissioning, I learned after I chose it that the credits are earned separate from missio and are actually done through the V3 movement. Where, I kid you not, the main textbook for my remissioning cohort is Dan White's book, The Church's Movement. So I entered V3, again, just worried. There was a lot of anxiety in this process. Just like, how do you fit into this seminary role without having a church, not being a pastor, not having any type of context, right? Like, I was the only one in either my missio or V3 cohorts, like, just without that community, without that position, without really anything. I felt like I was very much in the wilderness. And I worried that in this cohort full of pastors from literally pastors around the world, that I wouldn't have a credible voice since I'm not in a pastoral role. And yet God used my pain and my experiences by allowing me and providing me opportunities to speak about all that I had gone through in the last year and a half in order to shed light into areas of darkness within other established church systems. Oh, so I chose the remissioning degree too. Like I said, I had to pick a concentration, and I chose remissioning because I had first felt God softening my heart to vocational ministry in 2015 when our former church leadership held a retreat called the Acts 2 Encounter. So just let those words sit for a moment. Acts 2 Encounter. 8 years later, after dreaming and praying about the modern day Acts 2 church, which, I'm going to be truthful, people told me just didn't exist, I am getting a master's degree in church remissioning while serving a church called Encounter that was founded on the principles of Acts 2. I could go on and on and on, but really the moral of this is that God is just so, so good. So as I continued to heal this last year, I would say that slowly that joy began to eclipse the sadness and the anxiety and the grief. However, like, I've got to admit that even throughout last year, I really struggled with forgiveness, especially forgiving the people that allowed abuse to happen within our church and just how our subsequent exit was handled. And I felt very much challenged by this and very convicted, you know, as I'm teaching on healing and reconciliation and redemption for the church and what that looks like for me. Because I was still carrying around like a lot of anger. And then one day we had the opportunity to go back. My sister and brother-in-law were having their baby baptized, and they wanted us to be a part of the service. And, you know, I didn't want to go at all. I spent a week making, you know, the pros and cons list, like what's the right thing to do here? What's going to be the best for me? But I think ultimately I was hoping to regain control, like a sense of personal control in that space. But going back was wild. It very much felt like we were ghosts haunting this life, that this place where we once lived. Like we were there, but it was like we weren't there. And all of those feelings of invisibility from Christmas Eve that the year prior, they just kept like flooding back. I so badly wanted to regain control from this experience, but that control did not come in the sense of feeling powerful in that space again. In fact, like, I felt anything but powerful. I felt about this big. But what I did gain was clarity and really an honest and uncomfortable awareness of who I once was as a member of that congregation. And so as I was working through all of the anger I felt like after that experience of going back and not really being acknowledged and all of that, like sometime in the coming days, I just felt like this voice say to me, like, Laura, you can extend grace to these people because you were once one of them. And so I sat with that and I reflected on my time there and I realized, like, ooh, yeah, like there were people who left the staff before us, and when they were gone, they were just gone, like gone from our lives. No questions asked, no follow-up friendship, no ownership on my part that maybe things had happened that required my acknowledgement and that should have required repentance a long time ago. And let me tell you guys, like, that was an uncomfortable realization. When you can sit in a place of deep trauma wounds caused by abuse, realizing that you may have facilitated that for someone else, like, that was a really humbling moment. And so I was trying to forgive people and to extend, or I realized that I was trying to hold people to this accountability level for forgiveness that I myself wasn't able to hold. And so I realized that if I ever help, or if I ever hope to teach like healthy reconciliation as part of discipleship, which I think is a huge, crucial part of discipleship, that I myself needed to practice what I preach and to do the hard work. And so I decided to pick up the phone and I reached out to two different couples who had left before me, who I had not remained friends with. And I apologized for all of the ways that I didn't show up for them, for all of the ways that I turned a blind eye to things that were going on, for all of the ways that I just wasn't willing to listen to their stories and to sit with them in their pain. And I acknowledge, you know, like, I never did the hard work and I never asked the questions, but I'm here now and I want to change that. And this was by far, like, out of my entire healing journey, as I talk about, like, all of the hurdles of discomfort that I had to overcome, like, this was by far the hardest, because it wasn't just me sitting alone with God anymore. It was me looking at another human being who was made in God's image and having to atone for my behavior, which was rough. But from this, I found that, like, not only did these conversations yield forgiveness, but they have resulted in the revival of beautiful friendships that I think I had deeply been missing over the last few years. And more than anything, I saw that biblical reconciliation is possible. Like, it's possible, but it can't happen first without repentance. Like, we can't just forgive and then not acknowledge the sin that we're forgiving for. And so I found over the course of this last year and a half that none of these practices are possible without this deep abiding, because honestly, if I wouldn't have had everything pruned away and I wouldn't have had this season where I was forced to face some of this stuff and to do the really painful work of growing, like I wouldn't have learned any of this. And you see, the more time you spend in this abiding with Jesus, the more that you allow that pruning to happen, as uncomfortable as it is, the more you get to know who Jesus is. And the more you spend time with Jesus, the more of a desire he puts on your heart to want to reflect his image to the world. I really, truly believe that discipleship and community with others isn't possible without first that deep abiding for yourself. So throughout this last year, I have often felt really frustrated because I'm not in a position of leadership within a church where I can apply all of this. And that waiting for a doer is really, really hard. However, I have realized that while I'm not in a place to maybe remission a church, God has been using this last year and a half to remission me. And so over this last year and a half, I have done a lot of creative deconstruction. I have allowed God to prune away the many dead branches in my life that were not providing, like, ultimate life. And I've had to practice repentance for the many areas in which I had created idols in my leadership that were preventing me from growing closer to God. I've had to lean into death, but only with the hope of the resurrection. And now coming out on the other side of that, I can testify to the many examples of redemption in my life and the way that God has been remissioning my heart. And I wish, you know, this entire story could be packaged up in a pretty little box with a nice bow to say, like, it all ends well. The truth is, like, it's been painful, and it's still very much unclear what my destination is at the end of this. I have no idea what post-seminary life will hold. And even as I share this story, my seminary is in the process of merging with another network of seminaries. And with that comes the loss of my cohort, the loss of what I thought my experience was going to be. And there's significant grief in that too. But regardless, I know that the trauma that I have experienced has given me a brand new lens to view, not only to view God, but God's people. And I have gained this empathy that I didn't think I could have. I think I don't even know that I really had much empathy before all of this. But ultimately, it's in the healing that I have been able to find true contentment in Jesus. And as I was, you know, trying to wrap this up and figuring out how I wanted to end this, my therapist, who runs a page called the Trauma-Informed Minister or Trauma-Informed Ministry, posted a picture of Glacier National Park, where there's just this vast, I guess, I don't even know what to call it, just like vast damage from wildfires, where you can see almost like the shell and the skeleton of these major pine trees that have been burned. And then coming up at the base of these trees are all these brand new pine trees, baby pine trees. And so she posted this picture, and in the caption, I just think, like, her words just beautifully capture what my heart is in sharing my story and what I want to convey. She writes, "This picture describes my message to the Christian community right now. It is only through fire that the pine cone opens up and allows its seeds to be released to create growth of new trees. In the Christian community, we have made the theme of fire to only be about God taking all of us. But I am going to stretch you to think about healing all of you as part of the fire. Because whatever you have yet to allow healing to touch, you cannot minister to others in those areas. Your healing as a leader is essential to bringing growth. So if we think of that fire as allowing us to open up and an opportunity to heal in order to create new growth, like that is just a beautiful, beautiful image. She states, whatever you have closed up within you, you cannot produce growth in others. And so I really believe that this concept of abiding is more than just a personal invitation. It is the literal word of Jesus outlining how we are to live lives with him, rooted as the center, right? But also in community with others. And I'm not here to tell you that it's easy or that choosing this type of lifestyle is going to mean that everything is going to make sense to you or that it's going to be pain-free, because it's not. Like, I'll be really honest. It's the opposite. It's painful. It's hard. Pruning is awful. Period. Like, it's not comfortable. But pruning is also beautiful. And it's my hope that in sharing my story with you today, that you will realize that even though it is super hard and super uncomfortable, that in the end, that the hard is worth the healing.
Thank you for listening to this beautiful testimony. It was real, it was personal, and it was authentic. We hope that you will consider joining us in person someday so that you can hear more stories like these from the great people at Encounter Church. Check us out at www.encounterchurchberks.com. Sign up for our weekly email newsletter and follow us on social. Have a great week.